Without mic. Hello, 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 Studio 108 Seekers and Sages. I am so happy to be sitting today with Alex Handloff, and he is a very interesting person. Actually, one of Leah's friends, I just met him. So we have just been having so much fun with this get to know you conversation. And I want to read like some of the things that Alex has under his belt. Like what's like circulating in the orbit of Alex is a master's degree of environment. So sustainability, planning, and management of the environment. He's an anchor producer for a startup.
One Planet Media,
startup media company. He has a background in geology. He is a nature lover. He gives adventure tours to French-speaking people in Canada. That was his previous job before he landed here in Cleveland for what he hopes will be a temporary short-term visit.
We'll see. Don't give that away.
Should we stop recording?
No,
this is fun, Leah.
This is a conversation, Leah.
This is a real conversation.
Oh, yeah.
These are real people.
Everything's in bounds.
Just in case you didn't know, you can't see her, but clearly Leah's in the house. So we are just bouncing off some ideas here.
Yeah.
So how can you tell us like something about this background? Like, what really stands out to you that has shaped the way you think about the environment and sustainability? Was it just what you learned in your master's degree? Did you have real life experiences that kind of like launched you into this? How did this become so important to you?
Well, I mean, the master's is probably the tip of the iceberg. Really growing up, I was lucky to grow up in a small town in Colorado in the mountains. My dad, my mom, they both loved the outdoors. Mm-hmm. And so at the age of, I think, like five, every summer I'd go to the summer camp. And every weekend of that summer camp, we would go backpacking. And it was a real communal feeling, too, with that. So we didn't have tents, for example. We didn't use tents. We would find a space in the trees to hang a tarp. And that was our only protection from the rain. And it would rain. And we'd all group together like sardines under that tarp. And I just fell in love with that simplicity of being in the outdoors and interacting with twigs and bugs and water and wind. And it just became more important than any sort of cityscape, or sometimes even more important than relationships with people. So I really sought that out. And ever since the age of five, I want to be outside. I start to go nuts if I don't get to go outside enough. And when I say outside, it's not out in a parking lot.
Right.
It's really, away from
civilization
kind of, from cityscapes.
So there's a little bit of survivalist in you.
Yeah. Yeah, I like taking risks. I like challenging myself. It's a great place to do that.
And trusting the elements and trusting what's provided?
Yeah. It's not like I walk out and say, I'm going to find everything I need. I'm going to bring some food and water.
Okay.
I don't want to die, And so I try to take enough to survive and have a good time.
Yeah.
But by no means.
It's not a glamour thing.
Not at all.
Gotcha.
No, I'm very much a minimalist, both in the camping and also just the way I live.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
So that would definitely teach you to respect the elements in nature and all that she provides. And then, seek out things like geology and a master's in environmental studies, understanding. Yeah.
Yeah, it was this profound love I had, and I wanted to, I could see the relationship between humanity and nature, and it's not always a good one.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a bad one, even though sometimes we feel that way, that like, humans and nature, they just don't go together. But there's examples of people interacting with spaces and places in a positive way.
Right.
It doesn't happen very often. But it can happen. It can happen. I can give you examples if you want.
I do. I want to talk about, because Leah was telling me how very intelligent you are. About like sustainability and responsible living.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I want to go, because I know that we all have things that we do and everybody considers themselves really environmentally conscious. And mostly people will consider themselves environmentally conscious because they're doing their best. They're doing their best based on their understanding and their lifestyle. They're doing better maybe than the way they were raised or the way they used to be 10 years ago. So they feel like, okay, I'm really environmentally conscious. But I feel like we all have the next step or a growth place that we can move into. So can you tell me like what concerns you about what's going on in society in terms of environmental sustainability?
I mean, the biggest concern I have is that, and this is not just with environmental issues, this is with any sort of challenges we're facing, we seem to jump to quick, easy answers, hoping that they're going to solve those problems.
Right.
And so in the environmental space, one thing that comes up a lot is carbon capture. Okay, so we can agree, maybe, hopefully everyone agrees that we need to not have as much carbon in the atmosphere.
Right.
One solution that's been proposed, and a lot of money's gone towards billions of dollars, is to create technology that captures the carbon out of the air, sucks it out of the air. But this is a technical solution or a tech solution to a really adaptive problem.
Understood. So you're looking for like a technology to kind of fix something, which we could really just back up and not create such a big problem to begin with.
So maybe there's something we need to change our beliefs and how we use energy, as opposed to invent something that just that erases the negative aspect. And so a lot of that, a lot of the discussion around solutions really jumps towards this tech solution idea.
Right.
And certainly tech can be part of it and should. And there's, you know, there's great innovations that are going to help. But how can we find that fundamental paradigm shift? What I mean when I say that is each person believes in doing something different, in acting differently, in believing in a different way of interacting with our resources, so that we don't have to rely on inventions forever. Because there's only a certain distance that's going to get us. You know, living in the desert, and more and more people living in the desert, how are you going to get water? Certainly, you could take a pipe from here and deliver fresh water to Phoenix if you wanted to, right? We have the technology to do that. We can invent that stuff. But we're not thinking about it differently. We're not thinking about our resources. And eventually, that will create another problem.
Right.
And so that's hard to think about. A different paradigm, and like, how can you believe differently or know that a different way can exist?
And it's not that difficult to wrap your head around what you're saying, because it's not the only topic where we have, you know, in our human tendency to just put a band-aid on and say they're fixed.
Yeah.
And when it's a complex problem, when it's a societal problem, and it's deeply embedded in the economy, the lifestyle, like all of it, then you're not going to be able to have some simple solution that band-aids it. It's a really multifaceted conversation.
And yeah, it really requires engagement from everyone.
Yes.
It's the responsibility of everyone.
Every citizen.
And corporations and governments and everyone who has power. This is something I wanted to get into, this collective versus individual.
Yeah, talk about that. Collective versus individual approaches to each of these issues.
So, you know, this idea of recycling is good. We should recycle.
Mm-hmm.
But the onus is always on the consumer, the person who bought the can of soda. It's up to me to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
But doing that is never actually going to make recycling really, really successful.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to start from the can company. It needs to start from the government saying that the can company has to take responsibility for their cans after they deliver them, after they send them out, or the plastic bottle place.
Mm-hmm.
They have to take responsibility, because if it's just on the consumers to do it all,
mm-hmm.
that's unfair to say that it's our problem mm-hmm. as an individual, that you're messing up because you're not recycling enough.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not the case, it's we set up a system where the only person who's responsible is the person with the least amount of power.
I was just going to say, it's another power conversation.
Yeah.
The people with the most power are abusing their power and then expecting the people with the least power to clean up their mess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the idea of, yes, I can do something, I can recycle it, and I'm going to, and I do.
Uh-huh.
And there's other individual actions that are important, and they can change that way we mm-hmm. imagine the environment and the way we have a relationship with resources and things like that. And that's important. But it's also, we got to push corporations to do more. We got to push the government to hold them accountable for things.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to happen at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need both collective action, which is this force of maybe the top down, you could say,
mm-hmm.
Government and people with a lot of money and power, they have to make some changes, and the people, you know, the bottom up, believing in it. And anything that gets us remotely close to that happening is worth doing. So if it's going outside on a walk or like changing your grass to native plants, it may seem like, oh, well, shoot, what's that going to do? Maybe help three or four bees and butterflies. But really, it's changing how that person thinks about it. And maybe their neighbors. And
I was just going to say, people start looking, they start talking, and it's no different than any other of the positive initiatives that are going on in the world, whether you're talking about eating healthy, whether you're talking about getting fit, you know, all of our wellness umbrella conversations. This is a wellness conversation about the wellness of our planet and our society and how we can all, you know, participate in that. I know I was talking to my financial advisor a couple days ago, and he had taken over my account from the previous gentleman. And the previous gentleman I had chosen as my financial advisor because maybe like 20 years ago, whenever, he was investing in sustainable companies. And that was a very new conversation. And so I chose him to take care of my funds. And to so this new gentleman said, what does that mean to you? It's been 20 some years. What does it mean to you that you want your money invested in sustainable companies? And I said, well, you know, like I'd like the companies to be exactly what you're talking about, conscious of their footprint on the planet and be making, you know, proactive moves to better who they are. And he said to me, well, the government, all the companies are now. The government, I know, right, Alex? Mm. Right, Alex? I was like, he said, all the companies are, this is all government regulated. Like 20 years ago, it was really unusual for a company to take these steps. Now it's all regulated, so basically all the companies were. And I'm thinking of the continuum, and I'm like, okay, so it used to be that none of them were. Now they're somewhat regulated, so they're a little bit better. But tell me, there are some companies that are way over here that are making big proactive changes because it's a priority to them.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you've heard of a B corporation.
Right.
B corps. So normally a lot of corporations are C corporations, mm-hmm. and they have a fiduciary responsibility, especially if they go public. They have this responsibility to make a profit. And that's kind of their existence, is to exist and make a profit and make people money. B corp doesn't look at just money, even though that is important. It also looks at the environmental impact of everything that business does. It looks at the wellness of the employees. How do they get to work? Can you bike to work? Are they being paid well? Do they have time off? And so it's a socially and environmentally responsible company.
And there's a list.
There's
you have to qualify.
It's a whole process to become one. And there's, I think there's like 5,000 worldwide, something like that. It's worth double checking. The biggest one is Danone in North America. They make yogurt, among other things. So that's the biggest one. Another one that people know, Patagonia, that's a B Corp.
For sure.
And that's certainly one that environmentalists like to put on a pedestal, and they do a good job. Mm-hmm. But it's a question like, is B Corp even enough? Mm-hmm. Is being a B Corp even enough? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think some, you know, there's grades that you get from the B Corp people. I still don't know if we're addressing the root problem there. We're just making them better. Well, and I don't want to say that's bad. I don't want to undermine
that. No, it's definitely progress.
Progress is happening, but we don't have to stop there. Right. We can go further.
For sure. And I know that there are companies, and a lot of them probably small startup companies that are really holding that at their highest priority. Yeah.
Well, this is another thing, that individual versus collective. So you have an individual who maybe plants those native pollinator plants, who maybe doesn't pick up the leaves because that actually insulates the ground and you get the worms and they can stay alive longer and you have healthier soil. Little things like that, maybe just in your yard. And then that person decides to start a business. You know, that person's gonna have a much more, is gonna be much more inclined to do it in a way that is towards that B Corp or towards that more responsible nature than.
Right.
That someone who never has those experiences, you know, those little tiny things can make a difference.
And it really, it points to the fact that when my new financial advisor says this, that he's not seeing eye to eye about how important this is to me. So then as a consumer who's the little guy who appreciates that there needs to be some of this bigger collective conversation, then what I need to do is find somebody who is. Because how we shop, how we invest, how we live, all of that creates a higher level society.
Yeah, so, it merges. There's like, all these little connections.
It's like, we can't be saying these big companies need to do something. There's nothing I can do about it. I don't own Pepsi Cola or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, when in fact, there are things we can do about it. We can make more responsible choices about how we invest in everything.
And I mean, the danger though is to put too much on your shoulders.
Yeah.
Which I've done in the past. And then you can become depressed pretty easily because if you realize that no matter how much you care and want to make a difference, you are one person and it is limited.
Yeah.
And you can inspire people. You, even Gandhi had trouble, you know, making a big impact. And so I'm not Gandhi, so I'm not going to have anything close to that in terms of an impact on the world. But I can at least try in those little spaces that I can win.
Yeah.
The way I live, the people I talk to, how I talk
to
people.
So let's talk about, how you talk to people, having this conversation. You were talking about my 5 million followers for this podcast.
That's right. Hello, 5 million followers.
Hello, you 5 million beautiful beings.
Yes. Oh, my God.
I mean, 5.
Have you ever spoken to an audience, such a big audience? Really
this is like getting the voice out little by little. But, you know, that's why we ask you to share and to comment and to generate some love, because these conversations are really important to us. So that's the collective seed. So as an individual, I know we recently ordered some bamboo things in the thing, like especially straws are very destructive to the environment, to the animal life on this planet. And we can use bamboo straws as one example, or, recycling grocery bags. Like, I'm doing those kinds of things. What are some next steps? What are some things that we can do that might be simple next steps? Like, I'm just going to take one more step towards this.
I'll give you two.
Good.
So the first one I think is we all have clothing.
Right.
And so clothing is a huge industry, uses a lot of plastic. And there's this thing called fast fashion where things are made really inexpensively. You have a supply chain where nobody really knows how it's being made or where it came from. It's not very transparent.
Some of the fabrics, even you can feel, and you're like, I don't even know what this fabric is sprayed with or what it's.
It's certainly not any sort of plant-based thing. And you know, that can, there's microplastics that come out of your clothing every time you wash them. And so one thing you can do is buy less clothing. It's hard to avoid plastic in your clothes. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
It's in my clothes. But just wear your stuff more often or for a longer period of time, buy less. And if you can find something made out of bamboo, there's great bamboo shirts.
Yeah, there are.
There's hemp shirts. They're awesome. They last a long time. If you can find those, get them. But the biggest thing is just to not have as many clothes.
Not to be so frivolous about it.
Yeah. Wear something for years, and that's okay.
Alex, fashion is fun.
I am so not fashionable. And maybe that's why it's easy for me to say that.
Maybe like fashion is fun, but it's also functional. To be like a little more functional minded.
Or thrift stores.
Yeah.
Is the other thing. Like, even if you want a bunch of new stuff, go get something that was already. And thrift seems to be taking off more than when I was a kid. I grew up, we would always go to the thrift store. My mom loved it.
Yeah.
And that's where I got most of the clothing that I had as a kid. And you're growing, you're not going to wear it that long anyway.
Right.
Who cares? But it was kind of looked down on, at least in my town. But now it doesn't seem to be that. It seems to be like very accepted that people.
Yeah, and I definitely think geographically, there are pockets of society where it is considered fun and fashionable and really, and then there are other pockets where it's not quite the norm yet. But I'm surprised how many times I will say to a friend, you know, I really love that. And they'll tell me, oh, I got it from this, you know, resale shop, or I got it from a friend who gave it to me, like hand-me-down kind of, what's it called? Freecycle, you know?
Oh,
just,
yeah, I've heard
share with your friends kinds of things.
That's an easy one. It's hard to see the difference you're making because it's such a global, diffuse sort of industry. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason that there's this company called Shein. It's a Chinese company. I don't know if you've heard of it, but they make stuff like crazy cheap, like $9 for pants or something. They took off. They're like the biggest online retailer of clothing by far. And Bloomberg did this amazing article about it too. They took off because people supported that. People wanted that stuff. It's inexpensive prices. I get it. You know, you don't want to spend a lot of money on your clothing. But there was all these Instagram things where people buy, they spend $5,000 at Shein, they have some giant elephant-sized box that shows up, and they pour it out, and they show how much stuff they got. And so if we didn't support that company, if we had a more of a mindset of longer lasting clothing,
right,
you know, that company wouldn't exist. And it shouldn't, it can't. That's not sustainable, and it never will be. Fast fashion. It just doesn't matter what you're making it out of.
Right.
Even if it's all bamboo, which grows so fast, you're still not going to be able to keep up.
Yeah.
And so you won't see the outcome, but it's super easy. And the other, so the other one just kind of ties into that. Interrupt me if I'm
wrong.
It's just less of things. There's this idea of we're going to fix the transportation, we're going to electrify everything. And the conversation rarely revolves around, let's just use less energy. Mm-hmm. Like, could we do that? You know, could we not have as many lights on in our cities?
Oh my goodness.
Can we,
you guys are too young to know. Like in the 70s, there were energy crises. And it was a huge, huge thing. Turn off the lights. No lights after like 9 o'clock or something. And you know, people would ask on the TV, like, you know, no lights after 9 o'clock, we're conserving energy, you can't use, you know, unlimited electricity. You have to kind of think about that. It's been so many years since then, but now it's time to do it just from your own voluntary, responsible, internally motivated self. Like, let's just use less.
It's time to have that, or at least be aware
of
the energy that buildings use.
Yeah.
Buildings are, office buildings, there's so much energy that they use for their HVAC, units, you know, the air conditioning,
that's
air,
right,
like that. It's insane,
now,
the energy. What was that?
They're all empty now because everyone's working.
And that's the other thing. Do we even need those buildings? Look what they're doing. So just less of things. Can we just use less of everything? This is hard. This is not going backwards. I'm not saying we should live in caves, even though I think that sounds fun. I'm saying there's a way to use less.
Yeah.
Buy less clothing. Take your car less. Live closer to where you work, so that you don't have to drive really far. And there's all these different ways. Don't have as much furniture or get your furniture used. But if you have that mindset with everything, and it changes the way you think about what you're doing, not just like, oh, I gotta recycle, otherwise this doesn't enter my life.
And I'll tell you though, the word sustainable comes to mind. So like when you say buy less furniture, it's like having a sustainable mindset that you're investing for a long term. So just like you said, fast fashion, there's fast home decor,
mm-hmm.
where like every season, the whole house has to change. And like, there's always new dish towels and always like the new thing. So just like buy higher quality, let it last longer, think sustainable, just in how we are as consumers.
Yeah.
Because we are definitely an overzealous consumer culture.
Well, especially in the United States.
In the States.
There's other countries that don't. Well,
100%.
I think almost every other country consumes less. That's worth checking out. But
yeah, I think our numbers are the highest.
Yeah. So we use it's clearly possible to have a decent life, mm-hmm. and not consume as much, not have as much trash, mm-hmm. not have as many things, and not use as much energy, because energy makes all those things too. So it's not just using less plastic. It's the plastic comes from fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if we're using less of that, there's just, that would be a better world. And that's not hard. That really isn't hard. I'm not giving like discrete examples except for the clothing, but it really can happen with every part of your life.
And I think that what I appreciate about your offering this nugget to us is that everyone can kind of make it their own. So think about how can I use less, and then you decide, is it less travel? Is it less running around? Is it less purchasing? Is it less packaging? You know, it's like, you choose how you live a little bit less, and then maybe that makes it a little bit easier, more likely to do it.
I mean, I have a great example that I love salsa.
Yeah.
I just love it. Just, I can eat salsa all day long with chips. Leah knows. We went on a trip and I brought chips and salsa.
Yeah.
Oh my God. and so I save the jars, and those are my Tupperwares.
For sure.
Salsa jars. And then I make salad dressing and I put it in my salsa jar, and so I don't recycle the jars. I keep them and I use them. Like, they're my water cups.
Wow.
And it's just one small thing. I've never bought, everywhere I move, and I seem to move a lot of different places, I collect salsa jars when I get there, and then they become what I use.
Drinking glasses and your like you said, Tupperware kinds of things.
Yeah, and that's a cheap glass. It's like $4 for a nice glass. And it comes with salsa in it. Yeah. Just happens to have salsa in my glass. Yeah.
Yeah, I just have to eat that salsa.
And then I just have to eat it. I just have to eat it before I can have some water.
Yeah. But that's really good. And I mean, we find the jars for a lot of things too. They're super duper handy.
They're great.
Super, you know, even when I get home, you know, buying the bigger bulk of, say, nuts in a bag.
Yep.
And then putting them in my jars. They stay fresher longer. They look nice on the counter. And yeah, I get to eat the salsa, although it's not all salsa for me.
Well, it's not, you know, pickle jars too. They're
100%.
I mean, I'm just thinking
of
the same. Yeah,
pasta.
We use so many jars.
Yeah.
And I mean, great that they're, it's good to avoid plastic on that too, because
right.
the glass is just, even though supposedly there's a sand shortage for making glass.
Oh,
I don't know if you've heard about this. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty wild. I don't know the details, but apparently we're running out of sand to make glass. But here's something that really upsets me about glass recycling. So I spent some time in Mexico, and I drink beer when I go there. And so for a long time in Mexico, all the beer bottles were the same shape. And the way you recycled it is you pay a deposit for those bottles, and then you just return the bottles, they wash them, and they just reuse them.
Mm-hmm.
They just fill them back up. And you can see the little marks of the machine that they go through. And talk about a real sustainable way of reusing glass.
100%.
Instead of what we do in the U.S., we do not do that. We do not wash that glass and reuse it. We smash it up and put it into road base. We smash it up so we can melt it and line landfills.
Mm-hmm.
Or it melts down and becomes glass again, rarely. And so what a dumb thing. Here we have this wonderfully made glass jar, just wash it, reuse it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what you're talking about, in terms of we have a technological solution to it rather than going to the base problem and coming up with something super simple.
Yeah, it's like, I invented this glass melting machine.
Right.
Great, we don't need it.
Right.
We didn't
what
need
we
that.
Really need to do is just wash the glass.
And we got this carbon capture machine. It takes one ton out of the atmosphere. And you go, oh, great. We could just drive less and take away 10 times more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like it almost gives you the pass to be like, oh no, technology is going to deal with that.
Right.
I don't need to actually make a difference.
Well, and I know
we'll just invent our way out of the
even problem. Moving my lifestyle from traveling down to Yoga Bliss twice a day when I was teaching there, compared to just like jogging up here 3 miles. Like now, when I have to go get my haircut, where the hairdresser was like a distance, I'm like, do I really need to be driving that far to get my haircut? So then I'm thinking,
you do.
I might need to.
Just cut your own hair. Just cut your own hair.
He's got an answer.
Yeah.
Like, this is what I like the way you think, Alex.
Yeah.
But definitely opening up just the conversation to look at things new with fresh eyes and to assess, like, am I doing really the most responsible thing here? Is there a way for me to use less? Is there a way for me to be more responsible? So I'm hoping that gives you guys something interesting to think about and something to kind of investigate. We were talking earlier and I said it takes like a long time to turn the Titanic. It's like degree by degree by degree. And if we're not somehow growing in one direction of more responsible, then we're probably, you know, just slipping into less and less responsible. And the more we know, the more motivated we can be to just making small things better.
Well, that's
any
part
other
of
thoughts?
It. Yeah. Oh, yes. I think one thing is to be forgiving of yourself and others, because this is not easy. It's not, you can't be perfect.
Oh, now I like you.
You didn't before.
I was
yeah,
debating.
You were waiting, not now.
I said forgiving of yourself, that's like some yoga.
Well, it is. It, the idea that you're going to avoid plastic the rest of your life is really, really difficult. The idea that you're going to integrate into a society without having a phone, a computer, a car,
mm-hmm.
and all these things, that makes it really difficult. And so you can't be perfect in this. And so be nice to yourself. It's not, we didn't create all the problems. We can do our best about it, but it's going to take more than just this ascetic lifestyle where I'm going to go be in a cabin that I build that doesn't use any energy and I don't consume anything. That's great, but you're not making a difference, cabin guy. Like, nobody knows you're doing that. We have to engage with the community and with the society, even though that means we're not going to be perfect consumers. We're non-consumers.
100%.
So be forgiving. It takes time. Are we going to get to this 1.5 degree thing? I don't know.
Yeah.
I really doubt it. But we're actually at least having this conversation more and at least looking in the right direction.
100%.
Maybe we'll be late. Maybe will there be major consequences. But we're trying.
Yeah.
We're trying.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Thanks
sure.
for sharing perspective.
Of course.
You're all right, Alex.
Thanks.
You're all right.
I try.
So if I ever learn to speak French,
Yeah.
And want to go adventuring in Canada.
Or even the Western
you're
US.
You're the guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
You're
the
guy. But
not even you don't have to speak French.
I have to, I don't have to speak French, so I'm not quite sure I'm ready for your tour. But, you know, I'm going to work on that.
That is the entry point. You must speak French.
You must
if you want to hang
French.
Out with people, you must speak French.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Okay, so like, comment, share, do all the things, because we really appreciate you taking the time and appreciate these conversations for ourselves and for you. Alex, thank you. Namaste.
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 Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you,
thanks for having me. Thanks, Leo.